Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast, Film Fatales, where we talk about
okay, baby Jane, take it away.
Iconic actresses and their sometimes iconic performances. I'm Chase. And this is Blanche.
I'm the Blanche Hudson. You are the baby Jane of this podcast. Let's just
I'm the washed up and delusional one.
We are both washed up. I'm just stuck in my home in Hamilton.
Paralyzed.
I'm socially, racially paralyzed. And you're tormenting me with your outward personality.
Well, if you didn't get it, this week we're talking about the 1962 film, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and it's our final film with Joan Crawford.
And Betty Davis. It's a Betty Davis movie.
It's our final film with Joan Crawford. What have you thought about our month with Joan?
I think I watched this movie, like the Baby Jane movie, two times already. So, but all the other ones, I'm watching it for the first time. Sorry.
I thought you'd seen Mildred Pierce.
Mildred Pierce, right. I've seen it once, so I rewatched that. So, something that I picked up on, maybe you can, I'm curious to see what you think as well. Like, I feel like Joan, it's the more I watch Joan, the more you know that her range is actually not that big.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that after watching this movie, like rewatching it as well. She's more sturdy. She's so like steadfast.
Right.
And doesn't really have that range that Betty Davis and some of her other co-leads have. We can talk about each film like at the end of our discussion today. But do you agree? Like, she's not that of a great actor.
I
don't mean it like that. She's not that great as we like to think of her to be, or
she's not that. I mean, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane is the only one we've watched this month that I'd seen previously, and that was with you last year at your apartment.
Yes.
And I guess I agree that, like, having only known Joan Crawford as like this enigma, this like legend, this icon of Hollywood, having watched the films now, she's a good actor, but you're right that there's not a lot of range in her performances. I stand by the fact that she's the original girl boss, and I wonder if it's more of a testament to like not her acting, but instead like, well, maybe that's not fair either. I was going to say, like, the types of roles that were written. Like, the types of movies that were made. But then, like, Johnny Guitar is, like, especially for the time, was a very different role.
Yeah.
But Johnny Guitar was also the most exciting, I thought, her acting was. So maybe if there was more of that type of energy available to her, we would see. Like, because, like, movies and expectations of actors and actresses, I don't feel were as varied as they are now. Like, I feel like now there's a real push for like be a diverse actor. Like, if you're a comedic actor, you're now expected to do dramatic roles. You know what I mean? Like you're supposed to show like this incredible range, and that's what we expect. And if you don't do that, then it's kind of a letdown. Whereas back then, I don't think that was the same expectation.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I've been, especially with like CGI and like costume prosthetics, I feel like the actresses that we grow up loving, like Meryl Streep, like obviously she's talented, but also a lot of those performances are supported by, you know, costume changes, costume decisions, like cosmetic changes, and also like accent work. I feel like back then there wasn't a lot of emphasis on those things that I just listed. So like accent, costumes, and like makeup wise,
I think maybe Sorry, go ahead.
Which I think it's just how times have changed. It's just how, you know, the industry have changed. So maybe I judge it too harshly, but I kind of say I'm quiet a little bit, just a little bit.
I think that maybe whatever happened to Baby Jane is like kind of stepping into that, where, like stepping into what a half step into what Hollywood has kind of become and filmmaking has kind of become, because there are
totally.
And even Johnny Guitar, there are campy costumes. And Joan's performance in this, I actually think, is very different than what she's given in any of the other movies we've watched.
How so?
This, I think, because this is, in every movie we watched, she's like the working woman, the girl boss, the feminist icon. she's doing the thing. She's very rags to riches, she's always interacting with a man of some sort. And this movie, she's not really steering the ship. Like, she's not in control. Both her character and her as an actor are not the dramatic center of the film. Yeah, she's like the complete opposite now of self-reliant, right? Like, she is dependent on her batshit sister to take care of her. And that's different. And I think you see it in the acting too, because I think that's why when I went back and watched these movies and I learned that Joan Crawford is known for those types of roles, like Mildred Pierce, I was surprised, because I think in this movie, she's very quiet and she's for the most part quite timid. And it's not really until the end that we get very much like the full scope of her character's like autonomy, you know? So
yes,
I think this movie is different for Joan.
It's very different. Maybe I can add to that. I think the movie, there's a meta layer about, it's a movie about movie. It's a movie about their career, really. Like, you have Joan, they're both like retired actresses, correct? But they're reminiscing a different part of their career. Like, Joan was successful later on in her post-teens years, right? Whereas Joan is still pretty like, I mean, Betty Davis, Baby Jane was still stuck at her child star years. So I feel like this film, having watched Ryan Murphy's feud with limited credibility, I think what I've come to understand is like the film was almost like pitting these two divas against each other and almost doing an original adaptation, but kind of referencing their respective careers. Which I think kind of like mirrors what you're saying, because Joan has been historically taking those like self-reliant and entrepreneurial woman and like confident. Whereas, you know, like Betty Davis, her roles have always been a little bit more like ambitious and like dramatic. They both come from different kind of backgrounds. So like Betty Davis was more like a stage actress, and then turned into TV. Whereas Joan, as we covered, like she was more like a dancer before, and she kind of didn't have a lot of stage play experience, but she just went on to movie acting.
Interesting. Do you have background context about the feud? Like, I don't, all I know is there was a feud. I don't really know anything about the feud. They didn't like each other. No,
it's like a whole publicity thing. I think I shared you like one point, like one of my favorite YouTubers, her name is Isabella Be Kind Rewind. She published like a two-part video about their alleged feud, but a lot of it was part of MGM's publicity stunt, because they have been, these two actresses have not been acting haven't acted really actively in the recent years prior to this film.
Right.
But then Joan was actually the person kind of propelled this project together and inviting Betty Davis to be a part of it, because they have never collaborated together. So Joan was the person kind of bullied, but also like coming to terms with their age, and then
that
becoming their bonding reason why they kind of acted together finally. But the feud was like kind of half truth, you know, like it's a lot of those are rumors spread by MGM, but also they also knew that they're self-aware to know that the only way to kind of finish off a really strong performance is to kind of bring that publicity. So they kind of voluntarily a part of that feud too, like they're talking shit with each other, but they know full well that it was no like ill intentions.
There were no ill intentions.
They were like, obviously when two strong people work together, they're obviously like fun, like shade here and there. So for context, I'll keep it short. Joan was married to a Pepsi president at one point.
Okay.
So she brought like a Pepsi machine to the set. But I think Betty Davis brought her
own. She liked Coke. She preferred Coke.
Coke machine. She brought her own
for
Coke
real?
Machine.
Is that real?
Like, yeah, I think it was real. Or was it the other way around? It's like Pep and Coke style. Pep and Coke.
No, Joan. I saw that Joan was married to someone high up in Pepsi.
Yeah,
so are you telling me that they were the originators of the Coke versus Pepsi feud?
That would be so crazy. That would be so funny, actually.
That's actually amazing.
It's so obscure, though. Like, no one would know these things other than a few gays love them, though.
Did the feud... Okay, so the feud, even the alleged feud, did it begin because of this movie? That's where it began? Or
there
did
was
they
a lot
have
of...
a feud before this?
It was before, because
okay.
also from partially from Ryan Murphy's series, Betty Davis was being accused of stealing a few of Joan's boyfriends.
Oh.
But they actually work in separate studios. So I think Betty Davis was working at MGM, and then Joan was working to another studio. But then Joan was, prior to acting in Baby Jane, Joan was brought into Betty Davis studio. So they finally are working in the same studio. Because back then there were some like legal reasons that, you know, studios can only hire actors within their own studio. So there weren't a lot of like cross working. So sometimes studios will borrow players. They called actors players to play in each other's movies, but that happens really rarely.
Who do you think is a better actor?
Betty Davis.
Not just in this film, but like overall.
Just in overall.
Then why didn't we do Betty Davis month if you hate Joan Crawford so much?
No, I don't. I feel like it's a really good precursor to like talk about Joan Crawford first, and then we kind of like talk about Betty Davis.
We'll do a Betty Davis month in the future.
We're actually kind of doing Joan really dirty by talking about her first.
We have to talk about this movie. And I'm actually, after going through the other ones, I'm happy we're settling on this for all the reasons I said earlier. I think it's different from what we've watched for Joan specifically. I'm just like trying to find more tea on the feud. And Betty Davis was nominated for an Oscar for this and Joan wasn't. And I just know that Betty Davis probably ate that up. She probably loved that.
I think that year someone won, Joan Crawford volunteered to do the acceptance speech for the person who won that category.
Did she do the acceptance speech?
Yes, she did.
You're lying.
It pissed off Betty Davis.
Oh my god, she literally did. Oh my god, she literally did.
She was so cunty in that.
That was insane.
I think that was like the final reason that like the half feud becomes an actual feud. I think since then, like Betty Davis was so like affirmative about her hatred against like
these are like some petty queens for real. The Coke machine and then this Oscar thing. That's wild that she wasn't nominated for this film. Betty Davis was, and she accept, still got to give an acceptance speech on someone else's behalf at the Oscars while Betty Davis just lost the category. That's wild. That's like the best thing I've ever heard. And I can't wait to watch the speech.
They don't make these movie stars anymore. There's no feuding movie stars these days. No one's feuding anymore.
Who can we pin against each other?
Jessica Chastain and Amy Adams. I don't know.
I mean, why
are they the two person that I can think of right now? You gotta pit people against each other that love each other at first.
Like, yeah, they have to be in the same world. Okay, you know who are really good friends, who I learned after the Oscars?
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence and Emma Stone. How do we get them to hate each other?
I don't think we can. I don't think Jennifer Lawrence works the same now from 5 years ago. And she's a mom. Like, Jennifer Lawrence became a mom. I think that was like a huge part of her career. Like, she, in her interview, she kind of talked about her being a new mother.
Who cares? Emma Stone.
I mean, that matters. Maybe that's the feud. Maybe like Emma Stone suddenly.
Yeah, Emma Stone calls her baby ugly. Stone calls her baby ugly, and that starts the feud. And then Jennifer Lawrence buys a Coke machine, and then Emma Stone gets a Pepsi machine.
Yeah.
I'm going to find a way to make Jennifer Lawrence and Emma Stone hate each other.
You should write about that. You should talk to Ryan Murphy about it.
If anyone can do it, it's Ryan Murphy.
Okay. What did you rewatch it recently, or are you are we jumping off?
Yeah,
from
I rewatched
our last
it.
Rewatch?
I rewatched it for this.
Did you pick up anything interesting from this time?
No, I guess I just more closely and more with more familiarity was watching Joan Crawford act. You know,
yeah.
Which is obviously why I made those comments earlier. I think that's like I knew going into this that Betty Davis had a more expressive role, right? And a more, like, there was more for her to do with her role, and that's obvious. And I would agree, everyone would agree that she was like the acting star of the movie. Right. But whereas last time I watched this, I thought that, and then it was like Joan was fine. But this time, because I'm specifically looking at Joan, I don't think it's actually fair to discount her performance in this. I thought she, because so much of this movie surprises me because of how like actually suspenseful and kind of like horrific it is. Like, a lot of it is bordering on like a horror or a thriller. Is this, yeah, I guess it's labeled as a thriller.
It's called like hack horror. It was like the inventor of this subgenre called hack horror, which is like,
okay,
older woman becoming the horror itself.
Ma.
So like
Ma,
exactly. And also not you pulling up Ma all of a sudden. Psycho is like a hag horror classic. We covered that.
Right.
I don't know what else.
Yeah, so I guess like my point is just as a viewer finding this a little bit like suspenseful and scary is really anchored in Joan's character and Joan's performance. Like, Joan is the emotional anchor that's taking you on that like she's going through it while we're
the
going
voice
through
of reason.
It.
Totally.
Yeah. So there's definitely like a relation between the viewer and Joan Crawford in this movie that I don't think it would work without her.
Yeah, totally. She's like the objective timeline and like,
but yeah. And it is obvious why Betty Davis would get more of the outward acclaim and praise and credit for the movie.
Yeah, totally. This time we're watching, I want to give the actress Elvira a little more love. She was so good in this movie. This time, especially we're watching, what a great performance just for
Mady
every part.
Norman. Mady Norman was her name.
Mady Norman. I wonder what kind of role that she acted as well. We'll come back to it in a second. Do we want to pull up a review really quickly?
Oh, yes. Do I even have one?
We'll find one.
You can. Do you have one ready? Oh my god.
Are we going to use the same one? Mine is actual footage of what it's been like to be quarantined with my sister for the last 4 months. This is quarantine realness.
But I want to know if that person is Blanche or Jane.
Does that matter? We all want to think that we're Blanche, but we're just Jane. We're all losing our fucking minds. That was so funny. Actually, that's so true. Like, there's something so effective about the use of, you know, the characters in a closeted space and like a really domestic setting. Doesn't really rely on like flashy
right.
set designs or, you know, location shoots, right? But still using that limited setting to tell the most dramatic story possible.
Yeah.
The ending was some of the most left field plot twists I've seen.
And are you referring to Blanche's reveal or are you referring to the beach scene?
The reveal of her framing, guilt tripping, gaslighting. Also, wouldn't you? Why wouldn't so? If that is really how it went, that's how it went down, right? If
yeah.
I were Blanche, why would I not say the truth and still be stuck with my sister who is torturing me? Like, why am I only saying that until the very end of the movie? Like, why would you torture yourself? Like, hello? Like, I don't get it.
That's actually a great point. That's actually a great blank spot in logic that I'm not really, I hadn't even really thought about. Why did she do that?
Because she's like a fucking tormented person who wants her sister to serve as her forever? That's fucked. Like,
Because the only reason Jane was helping her was because she thought she did it. Maybe she was, I don't know, actually. Maybe she thought that Jane would, like, not help her if she didn't think that it was her fault. But then get someone else to help you. Like, why did you even want Jane to help you?
Maybe that's this whole, like, there's a whole moral superiority thing going on for Blanche. Like, she still wants to, like, have that power over her of not letting baby Jane know that, you know, it was not her fault from the beginning. I don't know. That was a little bit of a plot hole there for me.
Right. No, I didn't even think about that, to be honest.
But that the ending was a little bit, if you watch Sunset Boulevard, it's the same ending. But you must know the ending scene, right? Like, I'm ready for my close up, Mr. Demure. Like, did you know that?
I know the reference, but I've never seen it.
It's like this, it's the same kind of plot, but like Gloria Swanson, who is this retired, like forgotten movie star, she finally got the chance to be watched by everybody. So she kind of like walked towards the camera. She's like tripping her mind out, which is the same scene kind of feeling, just like Baby Jane, the final twirling scene.
I really liked the last scene. I thought it was really unexpected. Like, I just didn't expect it to end that way. And it was also really sad. I felt sad.
It was sad.
I feel like Jane had not only her career taken from her, but, like, most of her life taken from her because of this lie that Blanche told. And like, it was this really unexpected, like, sympathetic like switch up where now I'm like, what the fuck, Blanche? And
you
I
suddenly
just
don't
bad
know who to root
Jane.
For. Yeah. You yeah. suddenly feel like the whole, because the whole movie was leading up to us thinking Jane was a full right, like, bad person, but now
just evil. Yeah.
So, like, the final minutes doesn't make sense. Like, suddenly the audience don't know really who to root for, or, like...
But I kind of like it. Like, I kind of live for that switch up and that kind of, like, disorientation. Like, I don't know what to even think or feel, but I feel bad for Jane.
Sad. It was sad.
Now, let's not forget that Jane is objectively still a bad person. Like, regardless of whether she paralyzed Blanche or not, like, she was still serving her a rat salad and a bird on a plate. Like, she was still really messed up. Okay. Yes. Like, she's not absolved of all of that, but I just didn't expect such a sympathetic ending for her.
Yeah.
If I would have guessed from a modern perspective how this movie would have ended, if I would have guessed, it would have been like Elvira saves Blanche and kills Jane. And it's like, totally. Oh my God, she's free. Blanche is free. But no, it wasn't.
What happened to Elvira? What happened to her? I want to know.
They send her away. Doesn't Jane send her away? Doesn't she fire her?
I thought she was dead. Like,
oh,
baby Jane was like,
she does die. She doesn't. She?
I think that was still like code character, like Hollywood. I don't think they can depict like someone dying explicitly.
Was that
on
like
screen.
Glossed over? I need to talk to the people. I need to find myself. Yeah, no, she was dead. Yes, she died.
It was implied Jane, that she died, but not on camera.
No, it wasn't implied. It wasn't implied. I mean, they didn't show it on camera, but the radio was talking about Elvira's murder, and the police came looking for her.
No,
I totally forgot about that.
I was thinking about when we were talking about, like, this movie reminds me of Misery. Like, Misery by...
I never saw Misery.
You need to watch it. There's like, it's such a great, like, pair to watch this back-to-back.
It's based on a book, yeah?
Misery by Stephen King, played by...
Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates.
Oh, she won the Oscar for it. No, I've been meaning to watch, because I used to, which, let me just apologize in advance. When I was young, I used to be a big Stephen King reader, which
Why do you have to
I
apologize
would like
for
to
that?
Repent for those decisions.
Why?
He's like a little problematic.
Oh. Who isn't? Who isn't these
look
days?
Look into it. He's a little
out there.
Racist. But, you know. A lot of his depictions in his books are really not cute. So, okay. Anyways. I've been meaning to watch that movie because I was a big
yes. fan. It's like the hag horror trope that we're talking about briefly. Yeah. It would be really weird if it's not weird, but it wouldn't have the big same reaction if it's a brother and sister dynamic. I think it only works because we know these two strong actresses. We know the relationship between the two people in real life and also their style of acting. I don't think this movie would perform as good if it's like I said, a sister and brother setting or gender.
I think it was kind of setting. I'm trying to think. Obviously, this movie deals with like sibling dynamics and then obviously jealousy, fame, celebrity, whatever. Sure. I'm trying to think of the sibling dynamics.
It's a little perverse.
Yeah, but like when I look at me and my twin brother, there's definitely a star and there's definitely a flop, and you can determine for yourself.
Oh, I think I know. I think I know what you are.
No one asked you, actually, because I know what you're going to say. So,
saying the most well without saying it.
But I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
That's what are your sibling fight, dynamics? Right? What are yours? Would you serve your sister a rat salad?
We pinch each other. We say mean stuff we don't mean, but like... we never go all the way out there as to like actually do anything traumatic.
Imprisoning each other. Imprisoning each other, serving each other dead animals.
Impersonating each other on the phone line to order liquor.
Killing exactly. each other's friends. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Trying to run each other over. Just typical sibling
else?
Stuff.
Sibling culture. Exactly. Yeah, I feel like I miss those days when, you know, like siblings are, I think, go back to my point of it's a little bit perverse in this movie is because
right,
they're actually just a teenager. They're still living as a child in some kind of way.
Yeah.
Especially Baby Jane. Like, she's like re-fantasizing her child actress years, and like her she's still keeping a doll around the house. And
Baby Jane, yeah, for sure, is like a child star living inside this older woman's body. For
it's
sure.
Giving poor things. It's giving poor things Emma Stone stuck in her own mother's body. It's like that, like, weird that like it's living in the same sphere, I guess. yeah.
I don't fully see that fantasy.
It's weird.
I think of like Baby Jane as like this is what happens to people who are on Toddlers and Tiaras. Like, this is what happens when they become adults. Or like, this is what happens to like people who are on Dance Moms. This is what they will be like when they're old, washed up.
Little Pound Cake, I think.
Yeah.
That Little Pound Cake is based off of Baby Jane.
I think that gives that for sure. How well totally. That leads me to a question I want to pose. Obviously, you're more well versed, like referentially, and
are you calling
in
me
this
faggot?
Kind of world? Absolutely. Yeah. How did this become a camp queer classic? Because isn't this a camp queer classic?
Exactly. It's so self-evident. Like, do I need to say more? Like, it has everything.
Perhaps I'm just trying to open discussion because this is a talking format show.
It has everything that you didn't ask for, but deliver it. Like, 200%. Like, list. Okay, strong female performances.
Right.
Bitch ass. Like, not like young actresses, but like, the like a fine line of is this appropriate or is it just outright crazy and batshit unhinged,
right?
Crazy makeup. Betty Davis in full clown white,
for real, full baby doll clown.
She invented that makeup. She pulled up to the set and start shooting. She was just like, let me just put on this clown white. This is a true story, by the way.
Really?
That wig, in Ryan Murphy's series, the wig was like, Betty Davis intentionally used that wig because that's one of the wig styles that Joan Crawford used back then, like a few years back, like a decade back before.
Petty Queens.
And also just like unhinged singing, like creepy child acting. Yeah, that's like camp and like horror and like iconic lines. Some of my favorite song, my favorite lines are Blanche Hudson, you big fat movie star. stuff
like that. I think a key, obviously I think you're picking up on things that would make this like a queer classic, but I think a key aspect of this that makes it a queer classic is perhaps, yes, like the element of like stardom, Hollywood performance, but also it's like the delusion. Like,
totally, yes.
Like, gays are some of the most delusional people that you'll ever meet. Like, every gay person thinks they're absolutely eating when. And you know what? I won't say they won't. I will let them live in that delusion and live their best lives. But gays love delusion. I think delusion speaks to queer people so much.
It's a queer aesthetic, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And it also deals with nostalgia. I think that film does it so well. It's like a dangerous relationship with nostalgia in our past. And what that can drive people crazy, right? Like even Blanche Hudson, like, she's reminiscing her movie star years, but she's not letting go of it. It's still like an unhealthy form of of nostalgia, or maybe just nostalgia is just not a good form of like processing yourself. I don't think so.
Right. I mean, that last scene is kind of like a mixture of everything. Like the last scene mixes like performance, delusion, nostalgia. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, she's like, totally. She's really giving in front of all these people who are only there because the police are there and they want to know what's happening. And they're like, what is this old lady doing? But she's living. She's living. And that is basically drag in a nutshell.
She's doing drag. Bette Davis is so doing drag in this. This is so... There should be... Totally. Why... This hasn't... Like, why have we talked about, like, the influence of drag? Like, it's... Bette Davis is giving, like, pantomime performance. It's like
not pantomime clown, dame. Oh my god, drag
Jimbo realness. It's there was a scene from like Canada's Drag Race, like the first season, and Jimbo is like an acting challenge. Like she was, I can attach like a photo on our Insta, but she's fully giving like unhinged white older lady vibes. And I think that sets up like a textbook example of like this decrepit, should I use the word decrepit, like crazy character, which kind of rides between like real life and like crazy, actual crazy.
And delusion. I think Baby Jane is such a quintessential drag character. And that's obviously why you see Baby Jane referenced so much on shows like Drag Race.
Totally.
No one's dressing up as you, Blanche. No one's wheeling down the runway as Blanche. Okay.
Even my even my phone screen, it's Sasha Velour as both Blanche Hudson and Baby Jane. See?
Is that your phone screen?
That's my phone screen.
It's so pixelated, bitch.
Sorry. It's gonna come out better. Anyway, do we want to spend a few minutes just wrap up and talk about like how her performance has kind of spanned? I mean, we talked about this at the very start of the episode, but...
Sure. I also want to say that this movie smashed the box office. It made almost $10 million, which obviously back then is insane. Yeah. On a budget of $800K, they could not afford to pay Betty and Joan their usual asking price for a movie. So instead, they gave Betty 10% of profits and Joan 15% of profits.
That's a lot of money.
That's your behind the scenes
back
tea.
Then,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they made a lot of money on this movie.
I don't think actors earn that much nowadays. Like,
wait,
a percentage of the profits? That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking about that because that's such a kind of common thing now where actors can, like established actors, will negotiate a percentage of box office into their pay. And I'm curious how often that, yeah, or like Scarlett Johansson did it. Like, I'm curious how that, like how far back that goes.
Interesting.
Especially for women, particularly for women.
Totally. Yeah, that's a great point. Some of the films just watched. I feel like last episode we talked about, you know, there are certain films that you have to work yourself up to get prepared. Baby Jane, this film, it's not an easy watch. Like, I cannot just put it on and have a good time. Like, it's a little heavier than...
It's the more you watch inducing.
It, the more heavy it is, like, when you kind of realize what the movie is really about. Like, the older I'm getting, I'm noticing a few more parallels in between my life and both
God.
Of these characters. Even though
are
I'm
you
just,
okay?
Like, not even my 30s. Come on. But yeah, overall, I think from the fall films that we've watched, my favorite would be. Do you want to say we can say our favorite together?
How are you qualifying favorite? Are you do you
them.
Just? Do you just want me to... Yeah, we can rank them. Am I ranking them on how much I enjoyed Joan Crawford's performance or just the film overall?
The film overall with the mix of how that performance how important or how, I don't know how to say this, but like how important of her to the film success itself. Maybe that's a good way to frame
okay.
it.
Okay. You know? Work.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So number four.
Okay, what's your ranking?
Number four would be Mildred Pierce for me, actually. Even though
that
it's her
Oscar
winning.
That's so insane because you literally texted me like you're going to love, like you made it sound like you find Mildred Pierce sickening.
I mean, that movie specifically, it's now in retrospect feels so textbooky to me. A little okay. propaganda-y to me.
What's your number three?
My number three is Baby Jane.
What?
No, actually, yeah, the Grand Hotel. Sorry, the Grand Hotel.
Okay.
I get to see like a different, like a more flap girl kind of 1920s, 30s aesthetic of her, which I don't think we actually right. seen any films dated that far back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she kind of still has that dancer quality back in the Grand Hotel, but we didn't get to see that since then. And then number two would be Baby Jane, and then the first one would be Johnny Guitar for me.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're the same, except I would put Grand Hotel number four if we're considering. See, my rankings are different if you're throwing into the mix, like, how integral was she to the success of the movie and the plot, right? Because Grand Hotel, I don't really think she was. I enjoyed the movie, but she's so not the focus of most of it. Yeah. So Grand Hotel 4, I'd put Mildred Pierce 3, and then Baby Jane, and then Johnny Guitar. What movie do I think is the best all around, not considering any specific performance? Baby Jane would be my number one. Like, because this movie is so anxiety inducing and like genuinely a thriller. And I went into it really thinking like, oh, this is from 1962. Like, I'm not going to be scared. And I was like, I had anxiety watching this movie both times and I knew what was going to happen. But I think Johnny Guitar was my favorite Joan Crawford performance that we looked at, which is surprising. Yeah. I'm surprised.
Same. We're gagged, goofed, and fully gagged.
And the only color movie we watched, like even this one, was black
even
and
though,
white.
Yeah, even though I feel like the black and white definitely adds that extra layer of creepiness to, especially to Baby Jane's makeup.
Right.
I think there's like on YouTube there's like a colored version of certain clips of this movie. It doesn't look as well as just black and white. Whereas I think Johnny Guitar definitely warrants the color treatment more because the scenery, also the fantastic costumes, and the fire, you know, like the blazing fire, stuff like that. So.
Do you know Joan Crawford's real name?
Millie? Is it Millie?
Lucille Faye Le Sueur. Work, Lucille.
You were cutting off just now. Anything we want to talk about Joan Crawford? It's our first, we're wrapping up our first old Hollywood classic actress.
Yeah, I had a better time than I thought I would. I'm not going to lie. I thought that there's a real push and pull for me on this podcast where it's like I want us to do our due diligence in covering people who are seminal to the fucking
film
artistry
history.
Of filmmaking, blah, blah, blah. Okay, and that would be Joan Crawford. But there's also a big part of me that wants to talk about like things that are coming out in the moment and things that are happening in the moment. And in all transparency, things that are more appealing to a modern audience. And that's not usually someone like Joan Crawford anymore. But so going into it, it's not that I thought the movies would be bad. I just thought I wouldn't be as engaged as I have been. And I had a great time, Miss Crawford. So thank you.
Thank you. We salute you. I think one thing that for me to take away is that we want to make sure we're finding films that they're actually the main star of the film. Versus, I feel like that's hard. I know, like, because we want to like take a look at all like their overspanning career.
There's also a lot of value in seeing how an actor performs as a supporting cast. Like, there's a lot of insight into, for example, Ryan Gosling, who should have won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. There's a lot of insight into him as an actor acting circles around everyone else in that movie, even though he's relegated to supporting cast. You know what I mean? So there's value in looking at that.
Totally. Yeah. But not an ensemble cast like the Grand Hotel. Like,
right.
Like, I think that's like a huge difference too.
Yeah.
I think our sweet spot is where, you know, like in the 1930s onwards, but probably not predating too far back. I think when we were looking at Grand Hotel, and I'll keep it really short, like Greta Garbo is like one of the star back then, but then she was in her prime, just like she was in her prime while Joan Crawford in Grand Hotel was like a slowly up and coming star. So
right,
Greta Garbo I think was like the first maybe ish person that was like in the mantle of like iconic female actor, like actresses in general. So I'm curious to see where we're gonna take it to next time. Like if we're revisiting some of the old Hollywood actresses, I wonder what we're gonna do and who we're gonna.
We're definitely gonna do a Bette Davis month eventually. We haven't yet discussed who we're doing next, so you'll see on our next episode who we've decided. But I had a good time with Joan.
Yeah, what a fun! We salute you, you big fat movie star.
You can find us on social media, just Instagram actually, at Film Fatales Pod, and leave us a 5-star review. I never say that, so I'm rusty. I feel like you have a speech down at this
rusty
point.
Springfield. Yes. Yeah, leave us a rating wherever you get your podcast from, and let us know if you want to what films you want us to watch next, or what actress would you like us to do next? Yeah, thanks for tuning in. What a good time.
Great. We'll see you next week.